Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. All right. Welcome, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. This is Dr. Toni, and today I have an amazing guest joining me on this episode. It'll be a little bit different today. Like I was telling him, he is the first male that we are interviewing on the podcast. Dr. Paul Anderson, thanks so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you. And I'm honored to be the first male. That's cool.
For sure. And there's a really good reason for that. You know, because right now we're recording, it's the middle of September. We've been dealing with this pandemic for the past 6 months globally. And, you know, what it's been really confusing for a lot of people, really worrying and anxiety provoking, especially now that we're in September and there's kids going back to school. You know, we're really having our kids being exposed to kind of public and other people in ways that we hadn't before. And I had the great benefit of listening to your podcast, Medicine and Health with Dr. Anderson. That was last month, and you did a really amazing review on the research out there on how nutrients and nutrition can support our immune system, especially related to the virus that we're dealing right now. So I wanted to talk to you about that because, you know, you are one of the most respected and recognized educators and clinicians in the field of naturopathic medicine, in the field of integrative medicine. Definitely in North America and worldwide, you've had a focus on in your practice and in, you know, educating other naturopathic doctors on complex infections, on chronic illness, treating patients with cancer. You've been involved in research, human research trials when it comes to using IV vitamin C with cancer patients, as well as being an author of, you know, the Outside the Box Cancer Therapies book. And of course, your really focusing on educating both clinicians and the public right now with your podcast, Medicine and Health with Dr. Anderson, and as well as with your website. So I really wanted to speak with you to really help, you know, those moms out there who are concerned, who are confused, who kind of want some answers, you know, whatever answers are available out there when it comes to what can we do right now when it comes to this virus. And I know that's a kind of a lot to deal with, but I think, you know, you're the person to best give us some of those answers.
All right. Well, thank you so much. So I think that the place to really start is the numbers are on the side of children and younger people. Now, I want to say right at the top, because this can be misconstrued, there any statistic has its outliers. So there are children who do get sick. There are healthy people who get sick. There's, you know, there's all kinds of people who don't fit the classic, you know, older, maybe overweight or diabetic person that we talk about. But generally speaking, children are in the best place as far as transmission and seeming resistance, et cetera. But that being said, especially with it being fall and people have been either, you know, sheltering in place or locked down or some form of that for months now, and people are just mixing more. So there's, you know, potentially, and it's getting winter soon. So there's more of a chance for transmission of all kinds of stuff. So I think that the first thing to think about, aside from there is a little silver lining in that, you know, the age group is on your side, is the things we would, people like you and I would normally tell people this time of year to prepare themselves for cold and flu season are, if you just sort of exaggerate that a bit, that's kind of the same as cold flu season with COVID-19 around. And so it's not reinventing the wheel completely. Now later, if we get a chance time-wise to talk about post-COVID things, that's a little different. It's because COVID is sort of unique. It's not really like a cold or most flus that you've ever had. But as far as prevention goes, the first thing just conceptually I try and get people to think about is you have multiple layers to your immune system. And the important part about that is that we forget, because when things are working, we don't think about them. It's when we get sick or when something stops working, that's when we start to focus, you know, on our body. We forget that during, you know, from now until, you know, February, you know, cold and flu season, maybe March, our body is continuously every day fighting off stuff we come in contact with. And as people go more and more inside, as there's more, you know, heating going on, you know, central heating, recycling of air, as there's more viruses and odd bacteria around, we have things to fight constantly. And so the reason we don't get sick every day is we have this first line of defense, which is nonspecific immunity. And people, you know, it sounds like, well, you know, things like your skin and stuff like that are kind of obvious, but there's other nonspecific things that require a lot of energy. And the energy is used to take nutrients that you're eating and incorporating and feed the immune cells. So if you go from, say, a lower immune exposure time, let's say the classic, let's take COVID out of it. And, you know, classically, like summer is not usually cold and flu, and, you know, November is, let's say. Well, in summer, it's like you're running on low power with this immune surveillance. And so it doesn't require quite as much. In the winter, it's not just that it requires more, but it's working every day. So if you think about it kind of like something, you know, like let's say a motor, you know, your car, if you turn your car on once a week, you don't need to put a lot of gas in it. If your car's running 12 hours a day every day, you're going to be putting a lot of gas into it. Same with your immune system. So the front end things are very basic, but they're super important. So things that affect that are things that we can control ourselves pretty much every day. How hydrated we are is super important. And I know my children are all adults, but I have a lot of grandchildren now. And one of the things we see with them in school is they will, for instance, get dehydrated because they're busy and they're not thinking of, you know, drinking water and all that stuff. So there's a lot of coaching with that. A lot of people have their kids at home right now for school. And so you might want to watch that. But dehydration actually is one of the quickest ways to break down your mucous membranes, you know, defenses. Sugar is, and this won't be a surprise to anybody, if I could be very wealthy if I could say sugar would make you healthier, and
wouldn't that be
nice? So awesome. But and you know, and what do we want for comfort and all that, but we do have to be careful with levels of sugar, because sugar actually now has been shown to slow the immune, the sort of natural surveillance cells down. So, you know, during cold and flu season is the last time to be, you know, binging on sugar and stuff. The other thing, which normally, especially with children, is you have a little more control sometimes, is how much they're sleeping and resting. Sleep is very, very important. Rest and all of that. Usually we don't have too much trouble with getting kids to move around during the day. Although sometimes they're stuck at home, you know, doing remote school, you may have to engender that. But basic stuff like moving, hydrating, eating things that are basically good and all that. So that's kind of, I always like to start with those things that's just part of what we do every day. So we can either do more of the, you know, better choices or less. The other thing, which with kids, you in it's maybe no one else has this problem, but I did with mine, and I know with the grandkids we work on this. A lot of the things that are part of immune building foods are sometimes there are things kids really like, and sometimes there are things that kids are a little averse to, or they're not used to eating or whatever. So you have to find ways to kind of get those into their diet. Colorful plants have a lot of plant polyphenols and bioflavonoids and other stuff that are extremely important in viral defense and immune defense. If you look at all on natural things for, say, COVID specifically, you'll see bioflavonoids like quercetin mentioned a lot. Well, in COVID, quercetin has a particular, couple of things it does. It's immunomodulatory, but also helps your cells hold on to zinc, which is real important. But bioflavonoids like quercetin come in the colorful part of plants. And so fruit's a little easier to sell with kids, but vegetables are very important. So, those basic things are that important, getting them and keeping them in there. The other thing, of course, is we've become extremely hyper aware of, avoidance or, wearing masks or being, a distance or whatever, which during any cold and flu season, washing your hands and not being around people coughing on you. I mean, those are all really good ideas, no matter what's going on. But, beyond those things, which I think everyone's pretty, probably pretty clear on, and resting and hydrating and eating right and all that stuff. It's if we go back to the analogy of, running your car one day a week versus 12 hours a day every day, how much gas you're going to use. This is when the idea of adding supplemental nutrients into your on top of a good diet and exercise and all that stuff becomes important, because just like you might not need to supplement if you're only running your car one day a week, if it's every day and you're fighting off, it's not just COVID, there's lots of common cold viruses. There's a lot of atypical bacteria this time of year that people are coughing and sneezing around. There's certainly, COVID. There's all kinds of other stuff. So if I'm fighting all the time and I run out of some of these basic things, that's the day that the person's, sneeze in the air is going to get me. So that's when kind of the supplemental things, I think, come in. And I really like to, if possible, paint that picture that you have to have the base of the stuff you do every day, like eating, drinking, sleeping, moving. And then the supplemental things are the cherry on top of that. But it's a super important cherry this time of year, I believe.
I love that idea of the, just looking at what you're fueling your body with and, how much fuel you're using kind of when you're running that immune system, whether it is, on kind of low mode and you're not using a lot during the summer, or yeah, if you're running all day long, like a typical cold and flu season, or, like the past 6 months, like potentially we've been doing with this pandemic too. That's really key. And that kind of idea of, what kind of fuel we have and how well we're kind of treating ourselves, much like you would think of how well you're treating your car. The kind of the extras that you do in terms of oil changes and all those kind of things, whether it's, whether that's kind of like hydrating and drinking water or sleep or that kind of thing. And especially, like you said, with the hydration, that's potentially even more important if, you or kids are out there, wearing masks all day at schools. I don't know kind of about, where you're at, but, where I'm in Calgary, where kids are going to school and, most kids are having to wear masks all day long. And so, and that can really impair, the ability to drink water and that kind of thing too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the tough things right now is the fact that, we can look at, cold and flu season and kind of flu viruses and kind of common cold viruses. But this virus that we're dealing with right now is new. It's a new virus that we're dealing with. We don't necessarily have a lot of experience dealing with this particular one. However, is it possible to really look at both kind of the basics of you know, nutrition and our immune system function with how we know that we respond to different illnesses, respiratory illnesses related to other viral infections? Is this SARS-CoV-2 virus that we're dealing with right now, is it that much different when it comes to our immune system? You kind of mentioned zinc and quercetin that we know kind of impacts it. Is that really different or?
Yeah, so I think that that's, and we could easily spend a day on this, but mm-hmm. I think the cliff note version of that is viral illnesses that we get, especially during the cold and flu season, tend to be the cold family of viruses, quote unquote, and then the influenza family of viruses. And those act, they're different. They act in particular ways. They tend to bind in the upper respiratory tract and move on from there, et cetera. when you get to these atypicals, such as the family, the coronavirus family, which can, most coronavirus cause a common cold-like illness. But mutated coronavirus, such as the one that caused SARS in 2003, I think it was, and then MERS, 5 or 7 years ago, and then SARS-CoV-2. So SARS that we heard about that, Toronto was a big epicenter for it and places in Asia and all that. The first SARS, SARS-CoV, is literally the cousin of SARS-CoV-2, which is what we have now. One of the reasons that SARS-CoV, the original in early 2000s, that really was a problem in, as I said, I know Toronto and others in Asia, one of the reasons that didn't go as far was its latency was very short, so you really knew you were sick very quickly. And so it was very obvious who was sick, and there was less, you just weren't going to be walking around. The problem with SARS-CoV-2 is there can be quite a latent period where you potentially could be, getting sick, transmitting it. This happens with plain influenza also. And then by the time I'm sick, I've already seen 20 people and, they've all been exposed as well. The other thing is that unlike other coronaviruses, except these special ones I just mentioned, SARS-CoV-2, the COVID-19 agent, instead of just being an upper respiratory thing in your head, neck, it actually is upper and lower respiratory. So the receptors that it can attach to are many, many fold larger than its lesser cousins, the other coronavirus. So I think that on one hand, yes, it's a virus and it has similar things to other virus. On the other hand, it's got a lot of other things that, as you were saying, our bodies aren't used to, as far as ways to evade the immune system, get into our cells and replicate, such as binding to, our ACE receptors and places in our lungs, et cetera, so that by the time we know we're sick, we have a lot of the virus. Okay, that's a big thing with these. So, and if anyone's ever had, a cold and then they actually had like influenza, there's a big difference between those two things. A cold can be very uncomfortable, but you're not usually, wanting to just check out and die and everything. Like if you have influenza A, you're just not moving, your eyelids hurt and everything. It's kind of like the influenza level of infection, only it's got different ways of infecting us. So all of the things that we're going to talk about with respect to protective nutrients and all those other things that we said that are general will help you with any other virus. It's just that this particular virus burns up even more immune resources more quickly. And the quicker you burn up the immune resources, the faster it gets in. It's a lot like if you're trying to keep the, you know, I don't know, the rabbits out of your garden or something like that. You get a hole in the fence, and pretty soon it's a bigger hole, and then the rabbits are in the garden, and you can't really stop it. So the fence is kept up by nutrients and then sleep and all those other goodies.
Okay. That's a perfect way to think about, you know, especially that idea of, okay, how is it different than the other viruses? Just the fact that it is potentially, you know, impacting the body just more severely, and we just need more of what we already know is helpful. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, what, like I said before, you did do your own podcast episode where you did review the research and the nutrients kind of that are cited in the research to really support the immune system. And you have a great newsletter that we'll definitely make a post and link to in the show notes for people to look at. Could you kind of give us an idea of kind of what's in that newsletter? What nutrients have the most scientific research kind of supporting their role for our immune system?
Yeah, and like you said, I think the good thing about linking the newsletter is people don't have to worry about trying to scribble numbers down and stuff. It's probably easier just to read the numbers in the newsletter. But I want to talk through the – obviously, you can – especially when you start to add herbal medicines or botanicals and other things, you can go into – you know, there might be 100 things that we could talk about. But again, you want to start with the core things that are, but we know that our immune cells use a lot of, and we want to make sure those are going in, and then you kind of build your way out from there. So we'll start with the core. The other cool thing has been, for as frustrating as the scientific community can be, which on and off I'm a part of, but with research, when you get things like this, they have a pipeline for people doing research to get things published about 50 times faster than normal if it's about COVID-19 in any respect, and that includes nutrient studies and other things. So one of the things that in March we didn't have, so we had to sort of rely on research around influenza or SARS-1 or MERS or something like that, but now we have quite a lot of, which is why I wrote the review in the newsletter, is research specifically targeted towards SARS-CoV-2 and its mechanisms and all that stuff. So I'll just kind of go through the core things that are, you know, like really solid in the research, and we'll talk about some other stuff. The very first thing I was asked to talk about, and by the way, if you would have asked me in January or February if I would have thought I would have done, you know, 50 interviews and podcasts and classes about a new virus, I would have said, no, you're out of your mind, but things change.
Here
we are. The very first thing I was asked to do was an international update for physicians on vitamin C, because we know a lot about vitamin C and viruses. And they asked me because I had relationship to it with cancer and chronically ill folks. And so vitamin C, though, what we've seen now is more and more and more research, and just the bullet point really to take home is, have the sicker you get, and now we know not just with other illnesses but with SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19, the lower your vitamin C levels drop. And that's because humans don't make any vitamin C, so we have to get it from the outside. On average, non-sick person eating it is fine. If you're sick, you can't eat enough to keep up because your body makes none of it. So vitamin C becomes critical because it's an essential nutrient, meaning we can't make it, you know, no way, no how. Vitamin C is water soluble, so what we get today and then it's gone. So vitamin C is crucial in particular aspect. Now, you definitely want to get all of the things we're going to talk about from your food and then supplement on top of that. But what I'm going to tell you is everything we're going to talk about during cold and flu season, you're going to need to supplement to get enough to do it. So vitamin C is critically important, and largely because it's one of the only things we'll talk about that we just don't manufacture in our body. Okay, there's a couple others, but that's a big one. And people say, well, why is vitamin C, you know, you hear about colds or flus or other stuff, why is it so important? In the case of the SARS-MERS family, So these atypical coronavirus, and especially SARS-CoV-2, one of the jobs of vitamin C is certainly to support the primary and secondary immune functions. It works with zinc in keeping bad guys out or trying to kill them or whatever. But the other thing vitamin C does, especially with respect to these respiratory viruses that are nasty, is vitamin C helps to calm down the over-excitatory inflammation that gets going in the lungs and the blood vessels. And that's the part that gives us the breathing problems and clotting problems, and all the other stuff that COVID-19 has. So if you think about that, and I've got this virus now that's making my lungs inflamed and my blood vessels inflamed, I am now going to go from using a regular amount of vitamin C to keep the, you know, oxidation down to really, really large amounts, like within a day. So if I start with low levels and they drop off, I'm in big trouble. I'm very pro-inflamed. And the other thing that we saw from the original Chinese research, because they had the first patients there, was it wasn't so much that the person needed to have a ton of vitamin C, they just needed it regularly. So to keep people out of the hospital, they gave them very cheap ascorbic acid, plain vitamin C powder to put in juice or water or whatever. And in the hospital, it was either that or they would give it to them in an intravenous feeding. And as I say, it wasn't so much the dose was high, but it was persistent. So during cold and flu season, or if you do get sick, take it every day, because vitamin C is not sticking around and you're going to use a lot. And again, in the newsletter, we've got some ideas about that. Now, the next one, there's some other vitamins, but there's something that there was just a research paper that came out that I'm going to share with some physician colleagues tonight about post-COVID, but this has been something we've talked theoretically about, and they have a paper now on looking at some extremely sick COVID-19 patients in hospitals using it. And it's an amino acid that people like you and I use a lot of, called N-acetylcysteine, or NAC. And NAC does a bunch of things. So one of the things that it's kind of famous for is in the inflammatory stuff, where I was saying, you know, vitamin C gets used up when we get inflamed lungs or blood vessels or whatever. The other thing that gets used up a lot is thing called glutathione. Well, without N-acetylcysteine or cysteine in your body, you can't make glutathione. So unlike vitamin C, which we can't make, we can make glutathione, but we need the building blocks, and NAC is a big one. So that's one lot of NAC. But the other is N-acetylcysteine, like hydration, keeps the I guess you'd call it the health of your mucous membranes through the actual mucus production. It keeps the health of the mucus working. So what you want, this sounds funny to say, but what you want in mucus is you want mucus to come out of, you know, the glandular structures in your mucous membrane. So the ears, nose, throat, mouth, lungs, et cetera. And you want it to cover everything, because mucous membranes are made to be in contact with air and food and other, you know, outside things like viruses. So if you get dehydrated, the mucous membranes get dry, and then they're not a great barrier. If you start to get sick and inflamed, the mucus in the mucous membranes gets extra thick, and again, it doesn't move around like it's supposed to. Your body, in addition to making glutathione with cysteine and N-acetylcysteine, uses N-acetylcysteine to keep the mucus kind of flowing normally. And as a matter of fact, one of the reasons it got studied was in the hospital, if you're on a ventilator and your ventilator starts to plug up, they will give you N-acetylcysteine to get your mucus secretions leveled out as a drug. So they thought, well, let's see what it'll do with these people, you know, with bad COVID-19. And indeed, it was like it dropped. There's some critical lab markers that show whether you're going to more likely die or not in the hospital. It dropped those lab markers more than anything I had ever seen, including steroids and other stuff. Very, very important. And the nice thing is, except in the very beginning of COVID, when there was a run on N-acetylcysteine, you couldn't find it anywhere. It's relatively inexpensive. I bet the price is going to be. It's relatively inexpensive. It's relatively easy to find. And of all things like vitamin C and NAC are probably two of the most like high value, most cost effective things you can take. So I also like to mention NAC kind of at the top there with vitamin C. Now, that's other awesome. Things.
That, yeah. So just so I understand what you're saying too, and so everyone else understands what you're saying. So both vitamin C, but especially NAC or N-acetylcysteine, kind of helps to keep our mucus or like our snot nice and watery and thin instead of like thick and goopy and dried up.
Yeah. Yeah. Either end of the spectrum, either too thin and dry or too thick and not moving, doesn't give you that protection. And I think this still holds up. I grew up on a farm, so I remember we in the barns, we had the fly paper, which is the sticky paper and flies stick to it. Okay, hence the name.
For sure.
Mucus on a mucous membrane is sort of like the sticky stuff on fly paper. The virus goes in and it's supposed to get trapped there. And so if you think about it, if there's nothing sticky, the flies are not going to stay. And that's a weird analogy, but it actually kind of works. That's the thing with mucus. It's part of what just protects us from not being sick every day because we're always breathing stuff in. You know, that's not good for us.
Absolutely. I think that's a great visual. I can see that flypaper right now.
I think most people have seen flypaper. It's kind of gross, but most people have seen it. So the other things is a family of three vitamins that I'll mention that have a ton of research now. Now, if you a ton with respect to viruses and actually reasonable research with respect to COVID-19. And there are three fat-soluble vitamins, and there's a fourth that you could add in too, but the big three, vitamin A, D, and K. So vitamin A, for as long as I can remember in history of viral and vitamin combos, vitamin A has always been used for lung things, for respiratory infections, other stuff. There's a lot of good reasons for that are kind of biochemically complicated, but vitamin A is one of those things that, and I go over this in the newsletter, you need what you need, and you need more when you're exposed to a lot of stuff, but it's fat soluble, so total opposite of vitamin C. Vitamin C leaves you every day. Vitamin A is fat soluble, so it can stay around. So we are careful with dosing it, and it's really the kind of thing where you should work with someone, you know, like you, a naturopathic doctor, somebody trained in the use of nutrient therapies. But the bottom line is, used appropriately for a month or two, it's very, very safe. Vitamin A helps out partly with immune cell triggering and production. It works sort of like a trigger for the nucleus of the immune cells and other cells, especially your respiratory cells in your lung. It's got some antiviral properties. It's got a whole bunch of other stuff, but vitamin A becomes important. Vitamin D has... it's low hanging fruit in the research community because we already know it does good things with viruses and things. So they put out papers on vitamin D. There's a ton of them now. There's association papers that show the lower your vitamin D levels, the more likely you are to test positive for COVID. There's also ones on why would vitamin D help with these respiratory and inflammatory things, et cetera. And the reason I put vitamin D and K together is if you can, and nowadays it's much easier, vitamin K is another fat-soluble supplement, but vitamin K balances vitamin D and vice versa. So they do special things in the body. We think of vitamin D for our bones and stuff like that, not, you know, and now immunity and things. But vitamin K kind of keeps vitamin D doing the right thing when it's going around in your body. So a lot of supplement companies now have like 5,000 IUs of vitamin D and some micrograms of vitamin K2, which is all you need. It's just a little in there. If all you can find is vitamin D, great, that's fine. But if you find a DK2, that's what I take personally. And because these are fat soluble, again, they can build up. So if you're going to take them longer than a couple of months, you really want to work with somebody who's going to check your levels and stuff. But in the short term, D and K together are synergistic. They work better together. And then the other fat-soluble one that doesn't have as much research, but it kind of goes along with the glutathione, N-acetylcysteine, vitamin C thing, is vitamin E. And generally, if you have, you can get vitamin E in a lot of foods. And if you're taking a multivitamin, there's usually a kind of maintenance amount of vitamin E, like Edward, in there. But vitamin E is more, it's not something you need a ton of. It's just something you want in the background. But again, I would check your multi for that. So the in the vitamin end of things, those are the big ones. Now they finally, it's I'm laughing because it's so obvious, but someone finally came out with a paper about B vitamins and COVID, because you know no one was looking at it. Well, it turns out, so B vitamins run all the other enzymes in your body, and you know they're kind of very important for your body to operate. So B vitamins at the level that you would get from your food plus say a daily multivitamin or a daily B complex are very important because they're water soluble. Think about it, when you get sick and you get something like a fever or something, your enzyme levels activity goes really high. We're going to burn up your B vitamins. So B vitamins are also important. And then there's some famous minerals as far as it goes. We mentioned zinc, which is super important, and selenium, and there's other ones. But what I've been telling people to do mostly is to get a multi-mineral that has zinc and selenium, but has all the other guys in it. Because sometimes on purpose together, you know, a zinc and another mineral might work in an area. But sometimes just there are minor operators like, say, selenium we talked about, or chromium or others, that are terribly important when you're processing an infection or fighting one off. And so, yes, zinc is sort of the star of the show, and then selenium after that. But it's probably just better to take a multi-mineral and get them that way. Now, again, on top of the food that you eat, many plants have these minerals in them, some higher and some lower. With the internet, you can look up nutrient levels of anything. Meat has more minerals than a lot of other things. And there's some other foods you can take a look at. But for the most part, minerals are water soluble too, so you're not going to hold on to them for very long. And they, the way you want to think of it, minerals are a helper. They're a cofactor or co-molecule with all the other, for instance, vitamin C, or for instance, B vitamins or other things. And so you might have all the vitamin you need, but if the mineral isn't there, the process slows down. And if that process is your defense cells in your immune system, you know, which tear through vitamin C and zinc and other stuff, if they run out, they just get really slow, and that makes you a better target. So these water-soluble things are really important.
I think that's so important to think about those extra nutrients, like something like the B vitamins. I mean, I don't necessarily think of them as like frontline immune system support. You know, of course, there's the vitamin C, the zinc, yeah. Those kind of things. But to think about those minerals and the B vitamins also working in the background to just keep our motor running, so that our immune system is working properly is important too. And maybe I'll even link to the ones there. I think there's a couple of reviews that you had linked to in your newsletter that really goes, you know, through all of those different minerals as well to make sure. There's even some talk of our omega-3 fatty acids and even probiotics being important too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Almost everything that has some determination over our health now has been studied, and you know, it's still useful in this particular virus. In the newsletter, there's all of the reference material is there. And I kind of point out in the newsletter, if you want more, like a lot of deep, there's like a lot of charts in these references and things. Mm-hmm. So I usually say, if you want like food source charts, go to this one. Or if you want the mineral ones, go to this one. And they're all in that one. All of them are free, full text online. They're very easy to get online. So
perfect. Yeah. That's awesome. Now, in a perfect world, what research would you like to see coming out in the next like 6 months or so, or what do you expect to see in the next 6 months or so when it comes to nutrients and nutrition and COVID-19?
Well, I would imagine all of the things we've talked about are only going to have more papers written on them. And then some of the things like you mentioned, like omega oils and probiotics, and there's a lot of focus on not just probiotics, but digestive system dysbiosis and getting thrown off by the illness, keeping you sicker. So there's a lot of effort going into that because we understand that better now. So I think all of that will just get, like, the massive information will get larger, which is great. You know, what I would really like to see is a little more like some of the Asian and European countries have done. North America is just so resistant to this. And that is looking at strategies to either keep people from dying in the hospital or keep them out of the hospital with things such as I was mentioning, with vitamin C in the hospital, there's very specific ways to use it, but it's very simple and easy to use. And I've written protocols for hospitals to do that. The problem is hospitals are adopting it one hospital at a time as opposed to large groups, because it's one of those things that's extremely political. Even though there's some very well-known scientists doing it in their hospital, it's not getting around. And for example, because of all this, you know, I'll help hospitals when they ask. And one of the problems we have is they'll have somebody, they start to get better because they put them on intravenous vitamin C. And because they're getting better, they take them off and they forget. Well, it's like this, you can't take them off till they're out of the hospital because they're using that all up that day. So then they wonder why they crash when they take them off the vitamin C. So it's, you know, it's a sad state of affairs. The hope that I have is kind of like all this research that's coming out that would have never come out before. People will start to push either, you know, legally or through legislation, or just hospitals will say, yeah, what's the harm? Let's try it. And they'll start to track outcomes and see that, look, this very relatively inexpensive intervention, like giving people vitamin C while they're in the ICU, has more people living and leaving the hospital, like we've seen in Asia and studies and other places. I'm hoping that kind of happens and people start to be able to publish that, because it is a, you know, once you reach the point of needing to be in the hospital, it's a true public health crisis, and it's, you know, it's like $1 million for an ICU stay for anything, but especially this, and, you know, anything to keep people in the hospital less or not at all, we should really be looking at that. And I know some calmer heads are doing that, and it's cutting through some of the politics. So my hope is that we do more of that.
I definitely hope that, like you said, that we just learn more and more about simple, non-expensive things that we can do to really support our health, support our immune system, and really deal with this pandemic effectively. So thanks so much for joining us today, Dr. Anderson. And again, you know, explaining things so well, sharing with us all of the information that we know so far about how to deal with this virus. I really appreciate it. And so people, again, can look at our show notes to find a link for your newsletter. And also, if they want to connect with you, they can also do that. I know you share some great recipes and that kind of thing on Facebook and Instagram. So yeah, People can connect with you that way as well.
Yeah, that's how I break up the other side of my life is I cook. Easy. Instagram is just DRA online. So like Dr. A, DRA online. On Facebook, it's DR period A online. Somehow they needed that. But both of those have everything. And there's I have a new website for the public coming out, but those two, Instagram and Facebook, are where you'll find out about that. And we have a new book coming out in a few weeks because of my work in cancer, and it's all about strategies for dealing with your diagnosis and staying healthy mentally and emotionally during the process. So that'll all be on those two places. Yeah,
that's perfect. That's so important. Thank you so much for sharing all of your knowledge and wisdom with us today.
Thanks a lot.
So now we're going to switch gears, and I'm going to share with you my super mom moment and my mama mess up for this week. My mama mess up. So not that I could necessarily maybe do anything about it, but it was just a few days ago, this past weekend, I got a sore throat and I felt like a cold was coming on. And in the age of COVID, that means that I needed to get tested. So I went and got my test, rearranged some things so that, you know, I was staying home. Frankie stayed home with me. She stayed home with me yesterday. We survived through the day without going to the park, doing our regular things. So while maybe it's a mess up to get sick, it's, you know, something to be expected. You know, we deal with viruses and our immune systems respond. So that's when we get a cold. Maybe my supermom moment could be that I didn't pass it on to Frankie or my partner, Davin. They're super healthy. And I definitely felt like a supermom moment was earlier this morning. I got my notification by text that my COVID test was negative. So thankfully, not dealing with that and feeling great with all of the things that I knew to do to support my immune system. So again, that's where I wanted to share some of that information that Dr. Paul Anderson outlined so that you can have that available for you and your family too. My mama must have for this week would definitely be that kind of information that you can trust and that is laid out for you clearly. That's what Dr. Lisa and I aim to provide for you guys every single week. As busy moms, juggling family, juggling work, juggling everything that we're dealing with right now with this pandemic, we want to give you the best information possible for you and your family so that you can make the best decisions to stay safe and healthy. So thanks so much for joining us all this week. Again, you can see our show notes on our website, perimenopausalmamas.com. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. You can connect with us. If you enjoy this episode and other episodes, please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too. Thanks so much for joining us. Stay safe and healthy. Bye-bye.